And we're back. Welcome to part two of Cambridge Inside Out on May 1st, 2024. So I was talking a little bit about some of the proposed zoning on housing related matters. That's actually still sort of in the nascent phase, in that though there's the one petition, the citizens petition, the Ronayne petition is already going through the process, referred to the planning board and the ordinance committee. They'll be having hearings coming up quite soon. There's another petition too. I forget what it's called, Kalita or something like that, which wants to gut the affordable housing overlay and completely recreate it and do a lot of other stuff, but I don't want to get into that one just now. But the Azeem CDD, let's call it this, let's call it the Farouk petition, or the Chris Cotter petition, because honestly, if they're the ones who are writing it, that petition is not, there is no petition in front of the city council. So that's they're going to have another housing committee meeting tomorrow, May 22nd, where maybe a recommendation for some specific language may come out of that, so that they can rush it along in order to kind of head off the Ronayne petition and do the pilot higher and deeper version of that. But we'll see. Anyway, so that's before us. There are a few other things I think that are at least noteworthy. I'm just going to sort of do this more like a bullet points. At last night's Cambridge City Council meeting, it was kind of interesting, because there was I think it was actually last year, there was some meeting, transportation committee meeting or something, where there was a suggestion that maybe we should adjust the resident permit parking fee, so that it would, as they said at the time, more closely align with the actual costs of administering the program. Okay, so yesterday, what comes back is a recommendation from Brooke McKenna and the Department of Transport, was it Traffic Trans Traffic Parking and Transportation Department, TPTD. It wants to triple the fee. So they want to jump it, not like in the past, where it goes up a little bit, $5 or something. They want to raise it from $25 to $75. Of course, with the provision that if you're just going there to get a visitor permit, that'll stay at 25, right? But they also say they don't want to implement this until they can engineer some way to provide a low income discount, whereby low income, what that means is anything that can be justified based on seeking public assistance, being on some program that indicates that you are qualified to be called low income, right? But everybody else would get tripled. They also had some lovely discussion about, I think this, they are not recommending jacking up the rates even more for larger vehicles, which is what at least one of the city councilors would have liked to have done. But traffic and parking is not particularly keen to that, but they want to jack it up from 25 to 75. Now, the state law, the way I understand it, says that you can't really use resident permit parking fees just as a money raiser. So it really has to be tied to what the actual cost. And when asked last night what justifies the rise from 25 to 75, I said, well, much of it is staffing. Do we have to pay people to, stand there at the head of the line when, the line of latecomers show up in March, so they can take the magic marker and put your license plate on the sticker and staple these things together and hand it to you, right? But also for IT costs. Now, I found that one kind of interesting, because so if they're going to have to do, they were actually in the process now of changing some of their systems. So they're just going to roll that cost of the information technology, software costs and what into this. And I thought to myself, well, that's interesting, because If you're using that to justify jumping from 25 to 75, and if that software is something you basically purchase and use in subsequent years, then doesn't it seem, if this has to be commensurate with costs, that would then mean the permit parking fee would have to go down the following year after the initial outlay? Nobody brought that up, no. Anyway, it all seemed to me to be rather artificial that they just basically wanted to raise it to 75 and find a way to justify it. So that was kind of interesting. Now, on the increasing cost side, there was another very interesting discussion that took place during the city council meeting. Normally, I don't even pay much attention if there's an order comes in, says we'd like another authorization to either borrow or to take money from free cash for, because the costs of something have gone up. Normally I go, yeah, okay, it happens, right? So it was an item on the agenda for an they were seeking an additional $15 million to go into the renovation costs for the fire department headquarters, the one that's up at Quincy Street by Harvard Square and Broadway. So anyway, don't mind my computer's yelling at me here. But anyway, that was apparently the what makes this interesting is that, so this is a modest scale building. It's on a tight site, to be sure. It's an old building. It hasn't seen renovations in 100 years, really. So it needed it, to be sure. So in fiscal year 2019, there was actually an appropriation for $25 million to do the renovation of the firehouse. Okay, great. And then after they were actually getting into the muckety muck of it all, they realized, oh, we're going to need some more money to do this. So they, in FY22, just 3 years later, they came back with an additional $37 million appropriation on top of the $25 million. They think, okay, wow, what are we up to now? 62 million? Well, so last night they came back and says, oh, excuse please, we'd like another $15 million. So this brings us up to $77 million for this one building. Now, it's not just repainting, come on, I mean, serious, but it's a gut rehab. But the problem with that is that under the way the city's ordinances are now written, thanks to Budo and other city initiatives, the moment you're doing something on the scale of a gut rehab of a building, then all these other requirements kick in, like making buildings net zero, electrical. So how do you do that with a firehouse? I mean, I'm just trying to think of this, just thinking rationally, like, shut the door, don't let the heat out, right? Firehouses have big doors and big trucks that go in and out of the building. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, how do you make that net zero? Is it even possible to make that net zero? And certainly a reasonable question, is it wise to mandate that such a building be net zero? I would say no, it is not wise. In the great grand scheme of cost benefit analysis, I just don't see it. You can make it as if energy efficient as possible, you can do a lot of good things, but net zero, I don't know. So part of the 15 million, I'm not going to claim to know exactly how what percentage of it is, because in order to at least try to make it net zero, whether they're successful or not, we'll see. They have to sink, what was it? They have to sink 17 geothermal wells on an extremely tight urban site, is how it's phrased. And I'm thinking, okay, I mean, I don't know how many they sank for the City Hall Annex building at 344 Broadway when that was a, kind of a supposedly a sustainable building some years ago. I always thought it was just one because it's in the parking lot. There it is. There it is. You can point to it, right? This needs 17, all right? So you, what is this? Just because you've got to do that many just to try and make a firehouse meet the standards? It just seemed a little ridiculous to me. And there's also this second law of thermodynamics little problem here, which basically might suggest that, as you actually use the system, the more and more, the less and less efficient it becomes. You know, these are not like 17 wells in 17 faraway locations all working independently. They're all sort of drawing from the same pool of groundwater and whatever to, or temperature down below the firehouse station. So anyway, I just thought it was a great indication of where zeal kind of makes things a little beyond the pale. And this is not the last of it. There are a lot of other firehouses that are going to need some renovations down the road, and big renovations, major rehabs. And if each one of them is going to, it probably wouldn't cost $77 million next time. But, you know, I mean, is it really worth it? I mean, or maybe even if you're zealously wanting to make the world net zero, maybe the cost benefits suggest you should focus your attention on gaining efficiencies in other ways and accepting some projects that might not be perfect in your eyes. Anyway, it was an interesting discussion, right? One other thing that before I sort of pivot to something else, it was this city council order from Patty Noland and others, basically suggesting that City of Cambridge should do something similar to what Somerville does. We always like to follow Somerville. So Somerville is one of one city. There are other cities elsewhere who do this. They have this nice tradition they started some years ago called Porch Fests, which is where a band or something sets up on a front porch. You need a porch to do it, I guess. I suppose you could do it on the front lawn. And, and it's actually a pretty popular attraction in Somerville. So they're simply suggesting, hey, talk to the Arts Council, talk to whoever might be in charge in helping make this happen. And maybe we should be doing that in Cambridge. And I agree. And by the way, and I wasn't the only one to note this, during the city council, they said, we also do in Cambridge the River Fest, which, by the way, is coming up on Saturday, June 15th. Starlight Square is back in business for it's very short season. It'll be over by the end of June, but, there'll be at least a little bit of activity at Starlight. There is the citywide dance party is scheduled for Friday, June 28th. I don't have any dates for these things, but, there's often they do open studios for the artist studios will happen at some point. I forget the dates. Hopefully the library people will do the secret garden tours, which are actually pretty great. So there's some things to do around Cambridge. I think it's kind of worth it. So let me mention something I did today. Right, so city council meetings all over, whatever. But today there was a meeting of the Neighborhood and Long-Term Planning Committee, chaired by Joan Pickett, and I think also co-chaired by Councillor Sabrina Wheeler. And the topic was Central Square rezoning and the Central Square lots study. Now, I'm on the Central Square Advisory Committee, so I have a fair amount of knowledge about this process because we certainly got the presentation about the lot study. But the proposed rezoning is something a bit different, but they are kind of, hand in glove here. I'll just talk it. I'm not going to show you any graphics or anything like that. But it was, there are parking lots. There is the city took possession of what a lot of us call the Citizens Bank building at Temple and Mass Ave. Eventually, there's a lease arrangement in there right now, but eventually the city will have complete control of that building down the road. There are several other buildings, city-owned properties that are vacant. And there are various priorities about things we could do. One was, for example, down the road, maybe not so soon, moving the Central Square Branch Library possibly into the old bank building. So it would be in the heart of Central Square rather than sort of, tucked around the block there. Down the road, they may do some major changes where the library and the parking Green Street parking garage is, but nobody talked about that today. So what they were doing was sort of just floating some notions and timelines for this greater discussion. Now, I have to say, I was kind of a little bothered by what I was hearing, quite honestly. There seemed to be sort of a belief within the community development department that the only way to actually get public input is through their, or the primary way to get public input is through what they call their community engagement team. And I have to say, Mayor Simmons really provided a few very good life lessons to the person within CDD who seems to be in charge of that, because it, you know, their plan seemed a bit thin, to say the least. And they even said straight out, their focus is on outreach to, quote, the underheard, underserved, and historically excluded communities, which is good to get voices from and hear from everybody. It is true. But I worry that what will come out of this whole process will be a very distorted view of what the real needs and priorities are based on a sort of a selected slice of the community about what's really useful. I mean, they provided, I have it around here somewhere, but they, a list of community groups they would be contacting, and but there's this general problem. This isn't the only place I've seen it where what they do is rather than just try and get a good sense of the community, the full community, and what you sometimes do is you subdivide the community and essentially socially balkanize it into, the youth groups, the this group, that group, the various ethnic groups, religious groups, or whatever. And I was talking to somebody today, and I said, if you take just take a one of the available historic photos of Central Square, when it was filled with people going to shops and whatever. And you just sort of look at the crowd of people there and said, you'd have a hard time putting all those individual people into all these little boxes. But this is how the planners seem to think you're supposed to do stuff is you sort of chop the city up into ethnic categories, religious categories, whatever, and that's how you actually do the planning. And I'm thinking to myself, there's a lot of people around the city who might just want to come to Central Square who don't necessarily identify with any group, whatever. They just want it to be an interesting place. So the essence of my communications there, well, first off, I'll say that Melissa Peters from the Community Development Department just flat out said, this is first and foremost a housing production plan. And I think that's good in a way, because I think that's a good place to have more housing, mixed income housing. I will say that, everybody's least favorite person, Mr. Totten, came in public comment and basically suggested that anyone who goes along with that or who does business with private developers and development of housing of mixed any mixed income is somehow a traitor to the people. Yeah, man. Which I just think is wrongheaded. To me, the only way to actually do housing development in Central Square is to do it in partnership with developers, so you have an appropriate fraction of affordable housing and an appropriate a fraction of market rate housing. Really, it should be for everybody, and not try and just continually turn Central Square into a low income housing zone. I mean, there. One of my comments today was that you should stop treating Central Square like it's this utility, where basically you use Central Square to fulfill every priority that nobody else in the city wants to take on. So whether it's Mr. McGovern wanting to put in his so-called safe injection site, or the housing advocates who want the only housing in Cambridge in the Central Square area to be basically low-income housing. This is very wrong-headed in my view. Another thing I mentioned as part of my commentary today was that, you really, when you're doing planning, you ought to be thinking big, and I don't mean big in terms of heights and densities entirely, but just in terms of really putting Central Square, helping put it, really put it on the map. So like some really grand attractions that people talk about, and people say, hey, let's go to Central Square because that's where things are happening, and not just at night. Everybody sometimes focuses on the nightlife and the clubs, whatever. I'm talking in the daytime, so like let's go to Central Square because that's a really cool place to be at 2 o'clock in the afternoon too, but either for shopping or recreation or various other purposes, or maybe it's just a nice place to be, you know. And that often gets lost in this sort of slicing and dicing way that they sort of misplan things in the city. So anyway, so other things that are coming up. Oh, by the way, since I did mention that rather disagreeable fellow, I am just going to mention that I don't think anybody in the room particularly liked the fact that during public comment on, I think it might have been May 6th, Mr. Totten came right out and flatly called Paul Toner and Joan Pickett white supremacists. There is no place in the discourse in this city, even from somebody like him, to be saying things like that. I thought that was outrageous, and it should end. He also followed up in a subsequent meeting, essentially calling Councillor Sabrina Wheeler a traitor to the Democratic Socialist cause because he happened to vote a certain way or say something. So, you know, this is just getting absurd. All right. One other thing that's coming up very, very soon, is on June 5th, finally, after a long delay, there is a Government Operations Committee, technically the Committee on Government Operations Claims and something or other committee, but Government Operations, on the charter revision business. So, you know, the Charter Review Committee came back with a report and recommendations, which, by the way, the City Council is under no obligation to follow any of their recommendations. And if they choose to, they could create their own recommendations. So, but anyway, at the very least, they certainly have to consider what was given to them in January. And what comes of that, we don't know. But, you know, some of us were sort of expecting that process to start up sooner, but it waited. But June 5th, I think at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's coming. And again, I don't know whether there are any organized groups with agendas who are going to try and show up in numbers in order to kind of cram things down people's throats. I suspect that will happen, you know, because some of those same people showed up during the process over the last couple of years. You know, so I expect that to have happened. But, you know, there are some pretty important yet unanswered questions, or maybe they've been privately answered, but we'll only find out about it June 5th, having to do with questions such as if the City Council were to craft a petition or really, you know, proposal under existing Massachusetts general laws for charter change, can the state legislature amend it? So, for example, if they load it up with various things that may be poisoned pills, like non-citizen voting, lowering the voting age, or changing the date of the elections to even years rather than odd years, which would be completely different than the rest of the state, could the legislature just say yes to this, no to that, yes to this, no to that, and do it a la carte? I don't think they do that, but you know, we'll find out soon enough about that. There's going to be some big questions that need to be addressed. So, for example, even the Charter Review Committee did not make a firm recommendation for whether we should retain city manager form of government versus switch to a strong mayor form of government. I've made no secret about my point of view about this, which is we should definitely retain a city manager form of government. To me, the primary purpose of this whole charter review process really should be to basically take the existing charter, which exists in fractious pieces, quite honestly. I mean, you know, there's certain clauses that are part of Chapter 43 in the Massachusetts General Laws that people think of as the Plan E clauses, but they refer to another 50 that are elsewhere in the chapter, and that would be better. It just would be better if all of that was put into modern language and put into under basically one tent. But one point I've been making to some people, and I will make this come June 5th, make this point again, is that there are other aspects of city government that were created, you know, sort of because the Plan E charter was insufficient. So they went to the state legislature and had special acts. And actually, not even Plan E, but even the Plan B before it, which was, for example, the Election Commission was created in 1921 via special act. I think it's fair to say the Cambridge Electoral Commission is part of city government. So why wasn't that discussed as part of the Charter Review Committee? It's because I don't think they understood this. Simple as that. But I do believe that that ought to be brought in under the tent. The authorization given to the License Commission to act on behalf of the City Council in the granting of licenses. You know, that was done by act of the legislature as well. That ought to be brought in under the tent. 1961, we created a position of a traffic commissioner, and that was all done via special act. We established a traffic board, which was appointed this past year, but has never met because they're simply meeting the letter of the law, but not actually doing performing any function to speak of. Even the creation of the Cambridge Health Alliance was done through the legislature, and you know many members of the Board of Trustees of the Cambridge Health Alliance are appointed by the Cambridge City Manager. So, don't you think that ought to be part of it as well? So, anyway, but beyond some of those things, the other sort of really big ticket items that are part of the charter discussion, in addition to the city manager versus strong mayor question, there was a proposal for these things called, I think they're called citizen assemblies, basically under the general category of, quote, redress of grievances, which is really a very old term. And I think that that's something that really needs a lot of discussion, right? I may have characterized it in certain ways, but somebody didn't like the way I characterized it, but you know, the current proposal basically puts all the power of redress of grievances in the form of having a committee appointed by the city council or the mayor to take up a particular issue of their choosing. I don't understand how that fits under the category of redress of grievances, because generally what happens is people of a city or whatever jurisdiction consider something to be something they don't like, or maybe they have a good idea and they want to make a suggestion. It's not like the city council should appoint them to go and make a suggestion, which is what the current proposal effectively calls for. I think what you really want to have is a method for redress of grievances where you have a board with minimal power or no power, preferably no power, but which can meet and come up with things they want to consider independently, you know, so they don't wait to be appointed by a city manager or some hired hand to do the appointment process based on some demographic slicing and dicing. You know, I think it should be done differently. You know, again, one man's opinion, but I'm looking forward to this process. I think it's long overdue. And I am worried that it's just going to get swamped by political considerations, whether it's certain city councilors who basically want to change the system because it benefits them in terms of, I want to be an elected mayor or whatever. I'm looking forward very much to this, and hopefully it'll be a robust process, you know, leading to someplace better. But we'll see. Anyway, we're just about out of time here, so I guess we'll just sort of wind this down right now. So anyway, thanks for putting up with me, and I should be back hopefully first Tuesday in June for another edition of Cambridge Inside Out.